Hello and welcome to Ultimate Voices Europe, the EUF's new diversity podcast, where we highlight backgrounds and perspectives that don't always get the spotlight.
Hello, my name is Annika. My pronouns are she, her. I'm Swiss and I live in Zurich at the moment. My background is in gender and politics, and I, at the moment, work for the Canton Luzern, which is a local government in Switzerland, in an office for gender equality and LGBTI rights.
Hi, my name is Jakob, also known as Dunzi in the Ultimate community. My pronouns are they, them. I'm from Austria, currently living in Vienna. I'm a social psychologist. I work for 100% Sport, which is an Austrian organization working for gender equity and safe sport in Austria. Yeah, that's me.
We're both members of the EUF Diversity, Equity and Inclusion Committee, and in that role, we are launching this podcast today. In this podcast, we will be covering lots of different topics related to diversity, such as gender, queerness, ethnicity, age, and a lot more.
And just now I said we will be highlighting backgrounds that don't always get the spotlight. Ironically, our first guest is a player with a lot of visibility and reach. However, today we shall try to bring in some new perspectives that maybe fall under the radar amongst all the Frisbee talk, such as gender, queerness, accessibility within our sport, and more. Welcome, Liv Gewaltschak. Thank you for joining us today.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for having me.
Hello. I doubt, Leszka, that you need much of an introduction, but would you mind telling us where you're from, where you're joining us from right now, what teams you'll be playing for this year, so we get kind of an idea?
All right, of course. So my name is Levka, pronouns she, her. I am from Kiel, which is from northern Germany. I started playing Frisbee 10 years ago, and I am currently actually in Hawaii, because there's a tournament coming up. So I'm recording from Hawaii. It's the morning for you, for me. I think it's evening, night for Annika and Jakob. And what else? This year I'll be playing, I'll hopefully be playing with the German national team playing at World Games. I will be playing with Brit Squad for US Nationals, and this year, for the first time ever, I'll be joining an open team for the Euro and German National Series. I'll be playing with the with a team based in Hamburg, and then I'll see about Jinx and the women's division too, because it kind of depends on a lot of things. You know how it is. Yeah, that's me for now.
Sounds exciting. But today we're not here to talk Frisbee for once, or at least not on the field Frisbee. So I'm just going to skip over that. The first question I've got for you, Livka, is you're maybe the first person in European Ultimate, or one of the first, who has this level, an amount of sponsorships, a big following, marketability. What does that look like? And yeah, maybe you can tell us a little bit about that.
To me, that sounds bigger than it really is, but I guess I'll tell you the facts. So I do have a sponsorship going on with Be Ultimate, and I guess with Tokai Ultimate, with the cleats, and with Greatest Bag. So they all pretty much provide me with what their products are. So from Tokai, I get cleats. From Be Ultimate, I get provided with gear. And Greatest Bag, I get the bags. Then for Tokai Ultimate, I also get one flight in the season. And with Be Ultimate, there's just also some activities. They always have photographers at the big tournaments, and I get like all of these pictures and footages. And I guess I just get visibility through them. And they also, like, part of the contract is also one international flight. Yeah. I think that's that. And then visibility, I don't know, my Instagram account is very poorly managed. I have like, I don't know, like 4,000 or 5,000 followers, but there's not really happening much on it aside from me sometimes posting about Ultimate Frisbee.
No, thanks for that insight. I don't know, like, would you mind answering like how that is for you and like how, you know, like that has come with time, those like sponsorships, but like happened pretty early on in your career, I think. But like, how is that for you? And maybe even like as maybe a player that is queer, that has like a maybe a different reach as well in that sense, or like a woman from Europe. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I guess being in that position, it technically comes with some responsibilities, but really I haven't like felt or maybe not fulfilled that many responsibilities except for like trying to be myself somewhat, but I'm also trying to like not share too much privacy or too much of my private life that's not Ultimate Frisbee on my account. And then it's just been really helpful to get some kind of support to like playing Ultimate Frisbee on this level, traveling to the US, traveling to wherever the World Championships or European Championships are, paying for the accommodation, all that is just like financially so big and intense that it just helps to get a little bit of support.
Yeah.
But I still feel like I'm, or I have been struggling in the past, especially while I was still a student, to pay for everything that's coming up. But then of course, like any help was just made a difference to me, and without some of the help, like would not have been able to play all the international tournaments that I've been to and that I've gotten to go to.
Then I'm wondering, sort of with Annika and me being players ourselves, of course, I'm just wondering, being someone with that much visibility, as you are, how has that affected your social life within the Ultimate community? And I'm sure it must have maybe also changed a little bit how it is to walk around the tournaments in teams where people know you that you maybe don't, or maybe where people approach you. Maybe if you want, you could tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that's still feel very unreal to me and kind of weird and funny when I'm at an international tournament and then there's some players that approach me and be like, hey, can we take a picture together? Or like approach me and ask me about insights, or like, hey, I've been watching you on the field and this is really nice or inspiring. And that's always like very like it's surprising, but it's also moving me sometimes, or touching in a way where I'm like surprised but I'm happy, I guess, to have that kind of reach. I don't know if I'm happy to have that kind of reach, but I'm like it's crazy to me that it does make a difference to some people. And I guess I just remember watching Frisbee when I was, you know, younger and not as experienced, and when I had so many dreams about playing Ultimate and playing Ultimate at the highest stage. And I was watching all those crazy athletes. And now it just seems to me that I became part of that group that I always looked up to when I was younger. And that's just really rewarding, I guess.
That's really nice to hear. Keeping this on, but also moving into more like an equity perspective. Do you see differences between maybe you as a female matching player compared to male matching players in maybe this visibility, or like, do you feel a certain responsibility that might be different from other players regarding, I don't know, sponsorships or something? I don't know, there's like a difference now with like the UFA coming up and players actually being paid for this, but it's the open division. This is so many questions at once, but feel free to answer one of them and whichever you prefer.
Okay, so of course Ultimate Frisbee is like supposed to be, or is sometimes shows itself as, this progressive sport, but of course, especially when it comes down to sponsorships and pro leagues, there's still a big gap between open division, mixed division, women's division, and how female athletes are highlighted. I guess personally, I don't really feel that affecting myself though, because I'm still kind of like, as I said earlier, surprised or like in awe of me receiving some of that visibility. So it's not like I'm, you know, I'm like exceeding expectations every time. So it's hard to me to be critical when I like look at myself too. But then like the first players that come to my mind always when it's like visibility of women athletes, queer athletes in the women's division, I think of the Cadenas twins right away. And I'm like, I feel like they are the coolest, most visible ultimate frisbee players out there, regardless of gender, etc. But I also feel like maybe if they would be men or playing in the men's division, their charisma and their online presence would be used in a different way, and they would actually be very wealthy athletes. But now they are still also always kind of fighting for ways to get to tournaments, or they have to like organize so much around accommodation and like paying for everything that they play for and do.
Yeah, jumping on that, maybe how do you think you perceive like class within Ultimate Frisbee and like the Ultimate community? And I guess also specifically in terms of accessibility and high level teams and tournaments, maybe with a European focus, but it doesn't have to be.
I mean, Ultimate is a very unfair sport, and there are privileged players who can play the sport in the highest levels who have access to everything that you need to like play at those tournaments. You know, I don't even know where to start. Like, where do we start with privileges? But like, just the country that you play for, what's the quality of the country that you play for? Do you get a visa? And then, of course, just monthly wage is so different. And then for me or us, who are players that are from Europe, and I guess in comparison to many other countries, we get paid a lot of money for working jobs. And then still, all the championships or all the tournaments are so expensive for us. But then if you put that in relation to, I don't know, Colombia, where like the average pay for a job is $2 an hour, like $2 US an hour. It's like, how can you possibly pay for an international tournament? And then it just costs so much more organization, and energy, time to be able to do all that and accommodate that and get there. I guess that's something that's not being talked about that much, or you really have to get into contact with people from different communities that are really like far away, because we all are mostly connected to the communities and players within Europe, right?
I think you're spot on. I always wonder about how many great players just never become the great players they could be because they don't get the chances to.
For sure.
And then there's this thought of like, oh, of course, because Artemid is so sort of hard to get into and not super accessible, the people who do it for love of the game, not for money or something else.
Yeah.
But then, of course, that's a huge trade-off for how many people are not even capable of making that choice.
Yeah.
For themselves.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely like also because this sport is so young and there is like no money in this sport or minus money in this sport. You need to spend lots and lots of money. And maybe hopefully, I don't know, we see the sport growing into something different. But then, yeah, it will take so many years.
Yeah.
I was also interested to hear from you, Levka, how has your experience as a queer woman shaped your journey in Ultimate? How present has that been in the past or in the present? Yeah.
I think what comes to mind first is just how different that experience is being a queer woman in Ultimate Frisbee when I play Frisbee in Europe and then when I play in the US. The first time I went to the US or even when I played with Rebel, at PUL, it was so inspiring to see so many queer athletes in my team and the opponent's team would just like being out and queer and happy. Whereas in the European scene, especially like some years ago, I always felt like I was so much more by myself, or it was so special or different to be queer. And then just having this experience in the US now is just so inspiring because it's so normal. And I feel like they're just a step ahead of inclusivity because there's so much visibility already. And that's just been very refreshing. Also interesting to see, and of course interesting for like reflecting on what that means for the ultimate community in Europe and how much potential there is, but also like kind of sad how bad it is or where it has been. Or yeah,
what do you see, what does that mean for Europe, or sort of what do you think would need to change? Or is changing, maybe, because you also mentioned the change over time.
So what is changing is that I see more and more queer people that are out in Frisbee teams. Yeah, whether that's women's teams, mixed teams, or open teams.
I'm curious to hear, do you perceive a difference in terms of the structures of the communities in Europe and the US that cause this difference that you perceive? Or is it more like a personal thing of you notice how many queer people there are around you and how out they are, or maybe both?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So that's interesting. I think it's probably both. It starts with like the personal experience, but then because there are many more queer people, or Frisbee, I mean, it's not like hugely diverse in terms of like how diverse a community or us humans are and can be. Ultimate Frisbee is still not like the most progressive and diverse community. It's still a very white community. It's still very heteronormative, sexist. I don't know. But like, I do feel like in the US, there's more intentional change. There are teams that are really putting effort into making their program a little bit more equitable, into really actively trying to make this space a safe space and more inclusive space for Flinter people. So female, lesbian, intersexual, non-binary, transsexual, and agender people. A very simple example is calling in the mixed division, saying women or and men compared to women matching players and men matching players. And that to me is just like, it's so easy to do. I don't understand why it's not really been done in Europe, or why hasn't really changed yet, but that's really something I feel like almost everyone in the US that I've encountered or like met use those terms instead of saying women's and men.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, because I think like maybe it's slowly changing in Europe, but Europe has way more biological terms like female matching player and male matching player is something I hear way more often than woman matching and man matching, which would be more inclusive because it isn't as biologist, which is really interesting.
Yeah, it's like every time I go to the US, I learn something new, or I learn how we can be better allies. Because, for example, I've always used the term female matching and men matching players. And then I've been there and they were like, well, women matching and men matching is like supposedly more inclusive, more because it focuses on gender compared to sex.
Yeah. That's really interesting. And I think probably also the structural changes then like move into the community changes, and the way the community changes then changes the structures more. It probably goes hand in hand.
Yeah.
I think there's definitely loads of things we can improve in Europe.
So following up on what you said earlier about the Cardinal Sisters, for example, being female athletes with big reach and being quite publicly known as athletes, That does remind me of the fact that in sports, especially in sports that are already a bit more equitable, like Ultimate, or I'm also thinking of tennis, for example, with the example of Serena Williams, that at the very top level, the female names are almost as well known as male athletes. However, if you go a bit further and then you look at the, for example, top 50 athletes of each gender, there still is a huge gap that is forming and is widening sort of as we go deeper and deeper. And I also perceive that to be the case in Ultimate, where really at the top level, female names are quite well known. But then as we go further, that really changes. And I was curious what you two think about that.
I completely agree, especially with probably parts of it are due to UFA, and which was like before known as the AUDL, who have all just focused on the open men's division. And those athletes are becoming more and more professional. Like, that program is going really well for them in the men's division. But of course, that's really restrictive to just men in the community. And then the women's pro leagues are just like, don't have as much of a high profile as the professional men's leagues. So I guess that results in exactly what you said.
Yeah. I think even within Europe, I think it's really interesting because I feel like within the women's division, if you kind of play in the women's division, for example, you do know a lot of women matching players that are really strong. But you also know a lot of man matching players that are really strong. And I kind of wonder, because like when I talk to some of my friends, they wouldn't know as many, like to my guy friends, they wouldn't really know as many women matching players as I know man matching players.
It totally makes sense, and I agree. I feel like I don't know many open players, men's players, but I bet I still do know many more than the average open player knows about the women's division. But yeah.
How do we change that? That's an open question, not specifically targeted at you. Like, I don't think, or like, I wish you could just provide us with all the answers.
Yeah, no, I can.
Well, I just have some thoughts. I feel like it is part of a bigger, part of a bigger issue that is also sort of present in other sports as well when it comes to media coverage and also consumption. So that women's sports are being consumed way less, are also being marketed way less. That is also changing in some sports. For example, in basketball, we've seen a very big rise of viewership.
Yeah.
And media attention and so on. Yeah, but I think it is sort of how much sport is being consumed and watched and talked about is just a manifestation of how it is perceived anyway, which leads us back to other things we've already mentioned. I think that there still are differences.
Yeah, and I think not even just how much it is consumed and watched, but how much is given to us, like how much coverage is there, how many highlight reels are there, how many pictures are there of which players, where there is just still a difference in like how much diversity in general there is. Yeah, have you noticed, Lefke, any differences within that, maybe between the US and Europe, or do you think that kind of like is the same kind of
thing? Probably still is somewhat similar, but I think what can, or I hope what helps in the US is how there are so many programs for college frisbee and college ultimate. And so in the last week of January, I was in Boston and I just went to one of the like a random college mini tournament. And I was in awe of like the women's frisbee community that there was just for that one weekend. There were spectators, there was like some cameras up, the teams were, I felt like, I guess, I don't know if I was just in awe of like women's ultimate or just also like the college sports and what culture that brings with it, but I just saw so much potential in making this sport more equitable, or I felt like it was more equitable because I didn't see that kind of, or I don't often see that kind of hype at women's tournaments in Europe. And I was like this energy is so fulfilling, and it's hyping me up, and I wish more people could experience this and like see these young athletes. I don't know how to describe it. Maybe there's a better way, but I was just like so happy that I got the chance to see that, and it really made me more optimistic and brought my hopes up for the future. You know, like the Brute Scott players went to go and watch them. Other club teams from the area, they would go and watch. The coaches that have been there around, their friends from high school, from college, who are not playing sports with them. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, it sounds super nice. You're painting a pretty, I would say, heartwarming picture.
I do think like what you mentioned about sports culture in the US and like compared to Europe, there's definitely things that can help Ultimate in the US kind of like grow and get more visibility generally. Mm-hmm. But then that also translates to the women's division. Whereas in Europe, I think we just struggle to find fields for training. Right?
Yeah. And I think like it would be key for Germany or just like any countries in Europe to have programs in high school or through college. Of course, it's like different when college sports in general or high school sports in general are not like not as big of a thing. But even having Ultimate Frisbee parts of PE classes, which is not like some PE teachers can decide to have Ultimate Frisbee in their agenda, but it's really just like personal preferences and how many sports teachers are going to like change that and just like introduce the sport.
Definitely. On that note, maybe shout out to the UK and Ireland who do have college frisbee. And I think it does help. Like Ireland definitely has so many really good players that come from college, or some that come from even before from secondary school. But I do think like I played in Ireland for a year, a bit more. And I think like a big source of new players is college frisbee. And it's often players that have already done some kind of sports are like happy to look for new sports. And they also create a big like team and team vibe and culture in like really early on in college. And that really helps maintain players. And I think mainland Europe can learn a lot.
For sure.
Yeah. And maybe this kind of like leads into a new topic. You kind of brought a question for us as well for the UF Diversity, Equity, Inclusion Committee.
Yes, I did.
Would you like to ask that question now?
Lovely. Okay. So my question is, given that the mixed division Ultimate Frisbee reinforces the gender binary and creates challenges for non-binary inclusion, how, if at all, can this be changed? I think it's like a very open question, but you know, you brought open questions to me, so this is my question for you.
Yeah, so that's actually a really good question, and I'm really happy you asked that. And it's, I think, a big challenge for the UF or like probably any like institution that kind of works around rules and policies within Ultimate. And we rewrote the gender inclusion policy at the end of 2024. And that was actually something we really wanted to recognize, that the system of man matching and woman matching categories in mixed are not an optimal solution. Kind of all that UF can do at the moment is kind of recognize that it's not an optimal solution. And then for non-binary athletes, kind of really stress that it's important that they are comfortable within, like as comfortable as possible within the gender divisions of Ultimate. And the policy that we try to create, therefore aims to open up the possibilities for athletes to compete in the division aligned with their gender identity or where they feel most comfortable based on their gender identity. It still obviously kind of like divides people into a binary, but that's kind of like what we worked with. Jakob, you can
see. Yeah, I was just going to add to that, that it's just interesting how I feel like the mixed division is in one way the most inclusive in the sense of that there's just a mix of people of different genders playing together. I know from a lot of people and can also say for myself that that's the reason why I prefer playing mixed over single gender. While also it is the only division sort of that forces people into playing as one gender, because I mean, in the women's division, that's officially restricted to women matching players. And the open division, of course, is the open division. But yeah, I just think it's an interesting paradox how I feel like a lot of people prefer mixed because of the mix of genders, but it's also quite restrictive in that sense.
Yeah, for sure. And like you force people into making decisions every single point that they play. And it's kind of like a in-your-face decision every time. So I can just imagine that can be like very hard to do and struggle with.
Definitely. And like, not that doesn't help at all, but like it's almost everywhere in our society. We are like put into a binary system. So it would be to kind of create a space within us where that doesn't happen. And I think in the single gender divisions, it's a little bit easier, but still happens. And then the mixed reinforces it, sadly, still.
Yeah, and also they are like called single gender division.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, even that, like,
right? Part of the problem, yeah.
And also, another question though, the open division is not actually the open division anymore, is it? Isn't it? I thought it got changed into a men's division recently. Somewhat recently, like a few years back with the UF.
Within the UF, that's not the case as far as I know.
Maybe it's just within Germany then. It's just something that I've heard.
Yeah. Poo. I mean, I thought it was changed to men's and then changed back at some point.
I thought so too, but I'm actually not 100% sure.
I trust and believe that you are more up to date about this than I am.
Even if it's called men's division, which is still a bit shit, over open division, I think still at least people can still kind of play in the division they feel most comfortable with.
Yeah.
But then this is based on their gender identity. And then if it's called men's and the woman identifies as a woman, then you wouldn't really be allowed to play men's. So maybe we should look into that actually. So thanks for flagging it.
Okay. So the second part of my question is, what is the current transgender inclusion policy for the World Games, and how do you think that should evolve and could evolve?
So for the current World Games transgender inclusion policy, the EUF actually kind of doesn't have any say, because that's under WIFDIF, and then WIFDIF is under the IOC, International Olympic Committee. We did, as I mentioned before, update the European gender inclusion policy, but it doesn't really, like, it's not in effect for even the European players. They have to like uphold the standards of the IOC.
Okay, and can you just repeat, what are those standards of the IOC?
So the IOC standards are the same that were used at in Paris last year, as far as I know. And
so far, until now, hopefully they don't get worse.
Yes, exactly. That might, of course, happen.
The Olympics and stuff are in the US.
That might, of course, happen. Actually, so officially the Olympics have transgender inclusion policies and do sort of publicly stand behind human rights and equal treatment and so forth. But the restrictions have gotten harsher. For the past Olympic Games compared to the ones before. So they do include things like hormone testings, guidelines as to when, especially for trans women, when they needed to have transitioned physically. So there's rules about that it needs to happen before their 12th year of life before they're 12 years old, things like that. So it is actually quite restrictive, which led to the fact that there was no transgender woman competing in the Olympics 2024. There were trans men competing because the rules are just less strict.
And there were trans women at the Paralympics.
Yes.
They have a different gender inclusion policy, but not the Olympics.
Yeah. I think we can expect the same rules, if not even harsher rules, to apply to World Games, but we'll see about that. I wasn't able to find anything on the quick search that I made for World Games specifically.
Yeah, I think they haven't updated anything yet, but as like really sadly, public discourse and media discourse especially is really like shifting towards an anti-trans narrative, especially in sports. We can kind of only hope that it doesn't get worse. I think like within those big federations and things. And we are really trying to push against that with the policies in Europe, but there's only so much we can do on like a local level, but not on an international one or like fully international one.
Yeah. I mean, just to put this into perspective, right? The podcast, it's February 10th, I think. And Trump has been president for a couple of weeks, and he's already, what are the English words?
Banned trans women from sports, basically.
Yeah, when I was talking. So, yeah, it's scary and sad and devastating when it's like, we all felt like we were slowly moving, but moving into the right direction. And then now it's just scary.
Yeah, definitely. Okay.
Well, anyway, to end on a bit of a more of a positive note, we will always in this podcast at the end have a little section about role models and good practices, good practice examples from the community, from the European community specifically. So, Levke, I was also wondering for you, if there's a person, an initiative, a community, a team that you would like to give a shout out in that sense. Yeah.
Okay, so something that we've done or we've continued trying to implement in the German women's teams that I've played on is just focus on language, especially in a language that's German, even more important when like all words are gendered, that you speak gender-neutral language, that you are really trying to change the language in a way that you are inclusive to everyone, regardless of the gender, touch, etc. I do see how that can be difficult sometimes. So I think it's important to also educate yourself. It's important to listen to podcasts, to hear other people talk about these topics. There are and have been some presentations at Windmill, for example. Big shout out to Windmill, which have been very helpful. And I think had been news to some people that did go to those presentations, but also mostly people that were already interested in the topic went. So if you have not been, just go the next time and maybe talk to other teams as well. Talk to people who are maybe like a minority and ask them how to help them, how to actively make the space safer for them. So like just like more human and nice things in general. For example, at Brood Squad, we have this group that is called White People Doing Work. And we, especially in season, we meet up like every 2 weeks and talk about the ways that we can be better allies and about ways to be, I don't know, just also reflecting on ourselves and reflecting on when we have pursued white supremacy and just like trying to, I don't know, help each other out, but also create a space where we can educate ourselves and educate each other.
I can add to that as well, being from Austria, where we also speak German, adopting a gender-neutral language has and is an issue sometimes to enforce that, to get people to do it, to to actively change the way we speak, and that requires effort and is super important, however, because of course it just completely from the bottom up of our perception builds how we view the world and how we view our surroundings, ourselves, our players, the team members. So yeah, I can only add to that even though that is work, that's super important work and also pays off because that can change the way people view the world. Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to add to that. In Zurich, we also speak German or Swiss German, but funnily enough, the ultimate scene is very much an English scene. I think because, or the English speaking scene, because we have so many expats and things. And that actually is helpful because English is a little bit more gender neutral, that people don't have to like actively restructure the way they speak. I think they still should, not just within Ultimate, obviously. But I think it just creates a more inclusive environment just by speaking English.
Yeah. But I mean, also a potential of a language like German, where all words are gendered, is that you can also actively make space for everyone and like actively include people. Because that can, in English, you might say manager, but then because of people's heads and how heads work, or because of restrictive thoughts, stereotypes, stereotypical thinking, etc., we would just think of like a male version of a manager
or coach, or
you know, whatever. whereas in German we can also be very specific and yet inclusive. It just like costs more energy and education, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. I also wanted to touch upon what you said about sort of talking to other teams, other communities, maybe sort of widening your horizon a little bit about how things are being done in different spaces. I haven't played in the US, but I did live in the Netherlands for 2 years, and there I also really noticed a difference compared to Austria. And in the Netherlands, it still felt quite gendered. The language is pretty gendered as well. So also far from perfect, but I did notice a big difference compared to Austria with how visible queer people were, how normal it was for queer people to be present in public spaces in Frisbee, to be not something peculiar or something that people chat about, but just something the way people are.
I think what's important, if you say you want to approach other communities or like get into contact with them, you should always come from like a self-critical perspective, I would say, to not be like, hey, this is me and this is my experience and this is what it should be or whatever, but like just being like very self-critical when you approach.
Yeah, and not expect other people to be willing to educate you just because they can.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I think another point like about education is what you touched on before, like the windmill inputs and things, and probably even this podcast, I hope this podcast kind of reaches a wider community of people who might have maybe not gone to the windmill talks and can kind of listen to this series and try to educate themselves and also educate fellow players. I was thinking maybe it's also fun that from time to time we can kind of recommend one or two other mediums for people to listen in and to read and to educate themselves through this podcast and dive into these topics even further.
Yeah. I mean, thank you for starting this podcast and bringing visibility to queer athletes in sports or like more diversity in the European ultimate community. I think that's big and a step into the right direction. Thank you for being part of that.
Yeah, thank you for being part of it as well, for our very first episode. And thanks for joining and sharing some things about yourself and your experiences. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Leske. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks again to Leske for sharing a new side of her story and for talking about different perspectives on Ultimate Frisbee. We will be back with the next episode, for which we will bring on another exciting guest that will be announced soon on EU Episodes.
Thank you for tuning in. This was Ultimate Voices Europe, the EUF Diversity Podcast by Jakob and Annika.